Okay, so today we're going to have a look at a couple of more this morning, a couple of more sutras, and these are one. The first one is about impermanence and death, in a sense, a little bit more on that, and the next one is more like a summary kind of sutra, various aspects of Dhamma that are summarized. That is the Ratapala Sutta, quite a well-known sutra from the Majjhima Nikaya. So let's see what we have. What if we have here? So let's start off. So the first one is called the Araka Sutta from the Anguttara Nikaya 7th. Bhikkhus, in the past there was a teacher named Araka, the founder of a sect, one without lust for sensual pleasures. The teacher Araka had many hundreds of disciples to whom he taught such a Dhamma as this. Brahmins, short is the life of a human being here, limited and fleeting here. It has much suffering and much misery here. One should wisely understand this. One should do what is wholesome, lead the spiritual life, for none who are born can escape death. So this teacher Araka, this is a long time ago, this is like in the mist of time, right? Kind of like a fairy tale or whatever. And this Araka, he was one without desire for sensual pleasures. In other words, what that means is that he was a meditator who was able to attain samadhi and to go beyond the sensual pleasures of the world and find something more profound. And that is normally considered the highest you can go normally outside when there is no Buddhism around. You can also become like a Pratyeka Buddha. But generally speaking, this is usually considered like the highest you can go when there's no Buddhist teachings. So, and of course, it is very high. You're getting very close to awakening at this stage. So it is very, it is very special. And these people, but then would often be teachers. They would teach others. And Araka, he also had lots of disciples. And he taught them the Dhamma. And he said Brahmins. Brahmins is not just the highest caste in India, is also like an honorific term. If you want to praise somebody, any kind of, you call them Brahmins. They are, this is Brahmin in a slightly different sense. The idea of Brahmin as somebody who is spiritually elevated rather than just elevated by social convention, if you like. So, and then the Dhamma is, short is life, right? Limited and fleeting. It has much suffering and much misery here. And we shall see towards the end of the sutta what that actually meant in those days. Because that is kind of what gives the sutta the punch at the very end. So because of that, and this is kind of the standard thing, right? If you know that something is limited and fleeting, that you're going to die, death is always kind of potentially around the corner, then the right thing to do is to do what is wholesome, right? To get your priorities right. You know what you have to do. And that is the idea, one of the main ideas behind the death contemplation, this idea of understanding what is really important in the world, what actually matters, and put aside all the petty concerns, all the things that are irrelevant, etc. Then Araka comes up with his 7 similes to describe the shortness of life and the problematicness of life. Just as a drop of dew on the tip of a blade of grass will quickly vanish at sunrise and will not last long, so too, Brahmins, human life is like a drop of dew. It is limited and fleeting. It has much suffering, much misery. One should wisely understand this. One should do what is wholesome and lead the spiritual life, for none who are born can escape death. Right? He's pretty... These similes, they're quite clear that life is very, very brief, right? This is not much, it's kind of this very, just to drive home the point. And the next one is in a similar kind of vein. Just as, excuse me, when thick drops of rain are pouring down, a water bubble will quickly vanish and will not last long. So too, Brahmins, human life is like a water bubble. It is limited and fleeting, etc. For none who are born can escape death. Just as a lion drawn on water with a stick will quickly vanish and will not last long, so true, Brahmins, human life is like a lion drawn on water with a stick. It is limited, etc. for none who are born can escape death. Right? So all these similes here are all about just driving home how limited and fleeting it is and how quickly it passes. Very often you kind of ask somebody who is close to death, and you ask them, well, you know, what about life? What, you know, what is your looking back? How do you feel about it? And they say, a very common comment will be, it's all gone. It happened so fast. You barely got in there and it's gone already. What happened to life? And I think that's what people often find, right? They expect something else, something more out of life. And then before they know it, it's gone. What happened? What happened to all the dreams and all the ideas and all the plans we had and all that? It kind of evaporated in thin air. And then there you are, finding yourself on your deathbed. And you're out of here, moving on to something else. So it's good to, obviously, the point here is to get this idea into one's head as soon as possible. So that when you eventually die, you're not kind of shocked. Whoa, what happened? You kind of get it into your heart and mind as soon as possible, because then you can actually do something about it instead of waiting until it is too late. Just as a river flowing down a mountain, going a long distance with a swift current, carrying along much flotsam, will not stand still for a moment, an instant, a second, but will rush on, swirl and flow forward. So too, Brahmins, human life is like a mountain stream. It is limited and fleeting. It has much suffering and much misery. One should wisely understand this. One should do what is wholesome and lead the spiritual life, for none who are born can escape death. Right? And this particular simile is a kind of quite evocative, and it gives it this feeling of human life. It's like this swift current, right? People run around doing things, doing this, doing that. And always having this sense of purpose, a sense of aim, a sense of going somewhere. And then carrying along much flotsam, maybe carrying along a lot of casualties perhaps on the way, right? Or sometimes we do things and we don't really consider the consequences or the effect it has on other people. And then one day you're going to die. And you wonder, I've been running around all this time, being restless, being impatient. As somebody told me the other day, being impatient, being restless, moving on. And where was I going? I was just going nowhere. And then I'm going to die. And I wonder, whoa, what was that all about? So, slow down. Don't be like a mountain stream, just rushing along, rushing to your grave. Because that is really the only destiny in life. That is really the only place. So because of that, again, you understand that you need to invest your time in other things. In those things that actually give quality rather than quantity of life, so to speak. Just as a strong man might form a lump of spittle on the tip of his tongue and spit it out without difficulty, so too, Brahmins, human life is like a lump of spittle. It is limited and fleeting, etc. Much suffering and misery here. Just as a piece of meat thrown into an iron pan, heated all day, will quickly vanish and will not last long. So too, Brahmins, human life is like this piece of meat. It is limited, for none who are born can escape death. Piece of meat, I guess it is kind of suitable. We are these organic beings. We are like pieces of meat, walking pieces of meat in a sense, I guess. So before we know it, we will kind of have evaporated and there will be nothing left of us and we will have be gone, just like this piece of meat in the iron pan. And then the last one, which is I always found very powerful, and Ajahn Brahm quotes it in one of his books as well. Just as when a cow to be slaughtered is being led to the slaughterhouse, whatever leg she lifts, she is close to slaughter, close to death. So too, Brahmins, human life is like a cow doomed to slaughter. It is limited and fleeting. It has much suffering, much misery. One should wisely understand this. One should do what is wholesome and lead the spiritual life, for none who are born can escape death. Every breath you take, you are one step closer to death, right? So that's basically what this is saying, every time. Anyway, so, and then comes the kind of the climax of the sutta, the thing which kind of makes it interesting, makes it kind of special. But at that time, because the human lifespan was 60,000 years, and girls were marriageable at the age of 500, at that time, people had but six afflictions, cold, heat, hunger, thirst, excrement, and urine. And though people had such long lifespans and lived so long, and though their afflictions were so few, still the teacher Araka gave his disciples such a teaching as this. Brahmins, short is the life of human beings, etc., for none who are born can escape death. Right, and of course, and then there's a long section about, you know, well, but these days life is much shorter and much more problems, much more suffering, so surely if he could teach like that, certainly it is the case now. And then come to the end of the sutta, and the Buddha then summarizes his teaching. This is often how he summarizes things at the end of after a discourse, when he has given something which kind of to reflect on. And of course, the idea here, these things are very kind of emotional, right? They kind of drive home the point of impermanence, the point of getting down to business. Now is the opportunity. So the Buddha says, whatever bhikkhus should be done by a compassionate teacher, out of compassion for his disciples, seeking their welfare, that I have done for you. These are the feet of trees, these are the empty huts. Meditate, bhikkhus, do not be heedless. Do not have cause to regret it later. This is our instruction to you. This is what the Buddha often sometimes ends his discourses, especially if they are like an uplifting discourse full of similes to kind of drive home the point. Right now is the opportunity. Then he will often end it like that. And then he has done his job, that's all he can do, and then it's up to the disciples to carry out the instructions. And you will notice that the meditation is always done at the feet of trees or in empty huts, right? That's where the real meditation takes place. In solitude, away. That's why we have retreat centers, that's why we have forest monasteries and these kind of things, to be able to do that. Because these things are really impossible to do in the city or when it's too crowded and noisy and all of these kind of things. An important lesson that these institutions that withdraw from society are actually important, and they are a central part of Buddhism, a central part of being able to gain that goal that the Buddha talked about. It's fundamental, basically, here. So don't make sure that you don't have any regret later on. This is our instruction to you. There's a certain formality and power about the way the Buddha speaks, right? And then afterwards he kind of gives you a jolt and you think about it, and then you go off hopefully to that kirti and you do your meditation practice. Okay, so that is that sutta about Araka, the teacher of old. It's like a story, but I like this kind of, it's a nice story and has a certain power to it. Okay, so let's move on to the next sutta. The next sutta is known as the Ratapala Sutta. Ratapala literally means the guardian of the country. And this sutta is quite well known. It's about this man called Ratapala who decides to eventually to go forth and to become a disciple of the Buddha when the Buddha visits his hometown. And Ratapala, he is described in the suttas as the disciple of the Buddha who was foremost in faith. He was number one in faith and confidence in the Buddha. He only had to hear one teaching, and at that spot he decided, I'm going to go forth, I'm going to practice this life, you know, for the rest of my life or whatever. For most people, it takes a lot of teaching, lots of contemplation, lots of thinking about things before you decide to dedicate your life to something like this. But Ratapala, one teaching, and he knew, this is what I want to do. So he was foremost in faith among the Buddha's disciples. And the part of the sutta is just an extract I have here. It's quite a long sutta, and I like to focus on the essence of these suttas, because otherwise we'd just be reading lots of stories and anecdotes and narratives and that kind of stuff, which sometimes actually is very nice, but you only have so much time on a meditation retreat, so you have to focus on the essence of things. And this aspect which I have taken out here is a meeting between Ratapala and the king of the country where he grew up. after Ratapala has become an arahant, fully awakened, he comes back to his hometown and he has this exchange with the king of the country here. And it's a very nice kind of summary of basic Dhamma points, but it shows you the power of those basic Dhamma points if you understand them properly here. They are enough to make you go forth. They are enough to make you practice the spiritual life to the end. That's basically what Ratapala is saying here. So I always enjoyed these when I was reading them, and they're kind of they are summaries, right? They are like little aphorisms, little kind of very short little summaries, and then here he expands on the meaning here. So sometimes all you have to do is to remember that little summary, that, you know, three or four words, and then the meaning kind of comes from that. But I will tell you a little bit of the story as well, of what happened to Ratapala, because it is quite it's a nice story and quite strong in certain ways. So Ratapala, because his faith is so strong, but one of the problems is that to become a monastic in the Buddha's teachings, after he has met the Buddha, he decides, I'm going to become a monk. And the Buddha tells him, you have to ask your parents first of all. You have to have your parents' permission to be able to become a monastic, regardless of how old you are, it seems. So he goes back to his parents and he says, I have heard the teachings of the Buddha, and insofar as I understand these teachings, the only way to really give it 100% is to become a monastic. And the Buddha says, have you asked your parents? No. Okay, go back and ask, get your parents' permission, then we will ordain you. So he goes back and says to his parents, I want to become a monk. And his parents says, no way, absolutely no chance we're going to give you, allow you to become a monk. We love you. You are dear and pleasing to us. You are the only heir, right? We don't have any other children. You're the only one. And if you go, what are we going to do? And we have all this wealth. We have all this money. It was a very rich family that he came from. And we have nobody to pass it on to. It will just be taken by the king, right? Remember the thing about robbers and kings, right? The king will just take it all and it will disappear and it won't actually go on to the future generations. And this is kind of very much the attitude in India is very important, to pass on the inheritance to the next generation once you have kind of, and you can see why. I think it's probably true for all societies actually, that is an important aspect of life. You want to pass it on to the next generation. So they said, no way. And Ratapala said, okay, if that's the case, I will lie down on the ground right here, and either you will give me the going forth, or I will die here, right here on the spot, on the ground. Right? That's what it says. And he does it. And so he lies down, and he lies there, and lies there, and lies there. And the days go by, right? And then his parents start to get worried. Maybe he's serious about this. What's going on here? So they get his friends to come in and tell him and talk to him and all these kind of things. And eventually the friends realize that he's dead serious. So they say to the parents, well, if you don't allow him to go forth, he will die right here. But at least if you allow him to go forth and become a monk, then he may come back and he may visit you later on. So the parents think about it and they say, sort of realize that is the only solution. So they say, okay, finally, we will allow you to go forth. So he goes forth and he goes to visit the Buddha and he practices really hard and he becomes an arahant according to the sutta. And then after he's become an arahant, maybe takes, I don't know how long it took him to become an arahant, 15, 20 years perhaps, something like that. It says in the suttas, in a short time he became an arahant. Short time means at least 20 years usually. So he goes back to visit his parents, but he's an arahant now, right? So things have changed. Things aren't exactly the same as they used to be. So his parents decide, well, okay, Ratapala has come back. Now we will entice him back into the lay life again, because now we will have the opportunity. But it's not easy thing to entice an arahant to become a layperson again, because basically you have given up all of that completely in your heart, in your mind, all those fetters, all the bonds to lay existence have been cut, so you cannot really become a layperson anymore. So anyway, when it comes to his father's house, his parents, they have put up all this gold, right? They're very wealthy, so they have two piles of gold in the house put up. And then in the middle, they have kind of his old wife that he used to have. She's kind of behind a curtain, all kind of decorated up, right, with the best of makeup and clothes or whatever people had in those days. And then, so they invite Ratapava, and Ratapava sees all this. He's expecting a meal. He's not expecting this from his parents. So he comes into the house. They sit him down. They take away the curtain, and he sees all this gold and, you know, beautiful woman there, and all of these things. And his parents say, "Now is the time, you know, to return to the lay life." And then Ratapala says, you know, he says to his father that all this gold, he says to his father, all this gold, if I were you, this is what I would do with this gold. Are you ready to hear this? And his father is, and he probably doesn't know exactly what to say, so he says, yes, you know, let us hear it. And Ratapala says, if I were you, I would take all these golds, I would load them into big bags, big hempen bags, sew up the bags, load them onto carts, take the carts, drive them all the way to the river Ganges, and then dump all the gold in the river Ganges. And his father is shocked, right? His father doesn't know what to say here. And Ratapala says, well, the reason is because all that gold, all it will ever do is give you worry and troubles and problems. It will make it hard to guard and look after her. So much easier for you, have a much better life if you just get rid of it all. And at that point, his parents are kind of sort of ready to realize that he has, you know, he has kind of gone beyond becoming an ordinary person again. And at one stage, there's this short interaction with his ex-wife, and he calls his ex-wife sister, and she kind of faints on the spot when when he calls her sister. So kind of, they see things have somehow changed. It isn't the same as it was in the old days. So at that point, they kind of give up on him, and so he goes off, and he goes off into the forest. And this is where this story starts now. This is all the backstory, and this is now we come to the actual, the kind of crux of the sutta, the real meat of the sutta. So he's gone to this forest, right? And this forest happens to be the forest which is owned by this king of the same village, or the same city or town or whatever it is. So this is what happens at this stage. Then King Kauravya addressed his gamekeeper thus, "Good gamekeeper, tidy up the Migachira garden so that we may go to the pleasure garden to see a pleasing spot." "Yes, sire," he replied. Now, while he was tidying up the Migachira garden, the gamekeeper saw the venerable Ratapala seated at the root of a tree for the day's abiding. When he saw him, he went to King Kauravya and told him, "Sire, the Migachira garden has been tidied up. The clansman Ratapala is there, the son of the leading clan in this same Tulakotita, the local town, of whom you have always spoken highly. He is seated at the root of the tree for the day's abiding." "Then, good gamekeeper, enough of the pleasure garden for today. Now we shall go to pay respects to that master Ratapala." Then saying, "Give away all the food that has been prepared there," King Kauravya had a number of state carriages prepared, and mounting one of them, accompanied by the other carriages, he drove out from Tulakotita with a full pomp of royalty to see the venerable Ratapala. He drove thus as far as the road was passable for carriages, and then he dismounted from his carriage and went forward on foot with the following of the most eminent officials to where the venerable Ratapala was. He exchanged greetings with the venerable Ratapala, and when this courteous and amiable talk was finished, he stood at one side and said, "Here is an elephant rug. Let the master Ratapala be seated on it." "There is no need, great king. Sit down. I am sitting on my own mat." So this is a kind of fairly standard way that these suttas are introduced. You go as far as the road is possible by carriages, and then you go by foot, because it's supposed to be kind of slightly a wilderness area, I suppose. There's a park, but it's not obviously a kind of a fairly rough park, obviously, here. And then they have this ordinary courteous and amiable talk. You find this throughout the suttas. The Buddha also does that. He has courteous and amiable talk, first of all, and then they kind of get to business after the courteous talk is finished. So this is what happens here as well. This little thing about the elephant rug, I'm not sure exactly why that is included. Maybe that actually happened. I'm not sure why otherwise it would be there. So maybe this is a kind of real historical incident, perhaps. But the elephant rugs are not allowable for monastics, and that's why Rottapala says, no, no need for elephant rugs. Thank you very much. Okay, and then we come to the questions that the king has and the answers given by Rottapala to those questions. Then King Kaurava sat down on the seat made ready and said, Master Rottapala, there are four kinds of loss. Because they have undergone these four kinds of loss, some people here shave off their hair and beard, put on the yellow, not really yellow, the ochre perhaps, robes, brown robes, go forth from home life into homelessness. What are the four? They are loss through old age, loss through sickness, loss through loss of wealth and loss of relatives. And what is the loss through old age? It says aging here, but actually it's not that is quite a misleading translation. It really means old age, as you will see in a second. Here, Master Rottapala, someone is old, aged, burdened with years, advanced in life, come to the last stage. He considers thus, I am old, aged, burdened with years, advanced in life, come to the last stage. It is no longer easy for me to acquire unacquired wealth, or to augment wealth already acquired. Suppose I shave off my hair and beard, put on the yellow robe, and go forth from the home life into homelessness. Because he has undergone that loss through old age, he shaves off his hair and beard, puts on the brown robes, and goes forth from the home life into homelessness. This is called loss through aging. Right? So you can see here, it is a fairly shallow reason for going forth, right? Okay, I'm getting old now, got nothing else to do, can't make any more money, what am I going to do with myself? Okay, I guess I might as well go forth, right? That's kind of the rationale here behind going forth. It's not really a profound sense that there's something important about this, something transcending ordinary reality, something beyond ordinary reality, that you're seeking for a solution to the very problems of life. It's not really like that. It's a fairly shallow reason for going forth. Obviously, there's some faith there, that there's something to be had through monastic life or through the spiritual life, but still not very profound. And this, of course, is the whole point, the contrast with Rottapala, which we will see now. But Master Rottapala is now still young, a black-haired young man endowed with the blessing of youth in the prime of life. Master Rottapala has not undergone any loss through old age. What has he known or seen or heard that he has gone forth from the home life into homelessness? What is this magic teaching, right? What is this astonishing insight that he has had that actually enables him to go forth even when he is still young, even though he has, you know, hasn't really had, barely had life yet, only grown up, and then he kind of left ordinary life straight away. So what is that magic? The talk in the sutta is about the converting magic of the Buddha, right? People from other sects, other religions at that time, the Jains and other religions as well, they would sometimes go to the Buddha. They would be disciples of somebody else. They would go to the Buddha and then they would convert. And they would say, what is that converting magic? What is that Buddha saying? And maybe we can learn something from him. That's actually one sutta where one of these ascetics, he went to the Buddha to learn his converting magic so he could use that himself in his own religion. So that's very dodgy, right? That's considered stealing somebody else's things and pretending they are your own. Okay, so then we have the other losses that he talks about. And what is loss through sickness? Here, Master Rottapala, someone is afflicted, suffering, and gravely ill. He considers thus, I am afflicted, suffering, and gravely ill. I'm not sure if gravely ill is a slight exaggeration, but anyway, he's not kind of 100% anymore. It is no longer easy for me to acquire unacquired wealth, etc., etc. Why don't I go forth into homelessness? Because he has undergone that loss through sickness. He goes forth from the home life into homelessness. This is called loss through sickness. But Master Ratapala now is free from illness and affliction. He possesses a good digestion that is neither too cool nor too warm, but medium. Master Ratapala has not undergone any loss through sickness. What has he known or seen or heard that he has gone forth from the home life into homelessness? And what is the loss of wealth? Here, Master Ratapala, someone is rich, of great wealth, of great possessions. Gradually his wealth dwindles away. He considers thus, formerly I was rich, of great wealth, of great possessions. Gradually my wealth has dwindled away. It is no longer easy for me to acquire unacquired wealth, etc. Why don't I go forth into homelessness? Because he has undergone that loss of wealth, he goes forth from the home life into homelessness. This is called loss of wealth. But Master Ratapala is the son of the leading clan in this same Tulakotita. Master Ratapala has not undergone any loss of wealth. What has he known, or seen, or heard, that he has gone forth from the home life into homelessness? And what is the loss of relatives? Here, Master Ratapala, someone has many friends and companions, kinsmen and relatives. Gradually those relatives of his dwindle away. I guess they die or whatever. He considers thus, formerly I had many friends and companions, kinsmen and relatives. Gradually those relatives of mine have dwindled away. It is no longer easy for me to acquire unacquired wealth, etc. Perhaps I should go forth into homelessness. Because he has undergone that loss of relatives, he goes forth from the home life into homelessness. This is called the loss of relatives. But Master Ratapala has many friends and companions, kinsmen and relatives, in this same Tulakotita. Master Ratapala has not undergone any loss of relatives. What has he known, or seen, or heard? He has gone forth from the home life into homelessness. So all the way through here, the idea is that when there is a good reason to go forth, when you can't really enjoy the sensual pleasures of ordinary life, you can't have fun in ordinary life, well then you can move on to the boring homeless life, right? That's kind of the, almost like the underlying message here. So it is not a really profound, deep drive that makes you do this. It is a fairly shallow thing here. Master Ratapala, these are the four kinds of loss. Because they have undergone these four kinds of loss, some people here shave off the hair and beard, put on the brown robes and go forth from the home life into homelessness. Master Ratapala has not undergone any of these. What has he known or seen or heard that he has gone forth from the home life into homelessness? Great King, there are four summaries of the Dhamma that have been taught by the Blessed One who knows and sees, accomplished and fully awakened. Knowing and seeing and hearing them, I went forth from the home life into homelessness. What are the four? So these things are the things that caused him to go forth, right? So they obviously had a powerful impact on his mind. Life in any world is unstable. It is swept away. This is the first summary of the Dhamma taught by the Blessed One who knows and sees, accomplished and fully awakened. Knowing and seeing and hearing this, I went forth from the home life into homelessness. Life in any world has no shelter and no protector. This is the second summary of the Dhamma taught by the Blessed One who knows and sees. Life in any world has nothing of its own. One has to leave all and pass on. This is the third summary of the Dhamma taught by the Blessed One who knows and sees. Life in any world is incomplete, insatiate, the slave of craving. This is the fourth summary of the Dhamma taught by the Blessed One who knows and sees, etc. Great King, these are the four summaries of the Dhamma that have been taught by the Blessed One who knows and sees. Accomplished and fully awakened, knowing and seeing and hearing this, I went forth from the home life into homelessness. And then the king says, Master Ratapala said, life in any world is unstable and is swept away. How should the meaning of that statement be understood? What do you think, great king, when you were 20 or 25 years old, were you an expert rider of elephants, an expert horseman, an expert charioteer, an expert archer, an expert swordsman, strong in thighs and arms, sturdy, capable in battle? When I was 20 or 25 years old, Master Ratapala, I was an expert, etc. All of these things, sturdy and capable in battle. Sometimes I wonder if I had supernormal powers then. I do not see anyone who could equal me in strength. What do you think, great king? Are you now as strong in thighs and arms, as sturdy and as capable in battle? No, Master Ratapala, now I am old, aged, burdened with years, advanced in life, come to the last stage. My years have turned 80. Sometimes I mean to put my foot here, and I put my foot somewhere else. Nice graphic explanation of what happens when you get to that stage. Great king, it was on account of this that the Blessed One who knows and sees, accomplished and fully enlightened, said, life in any world is unstable, it is swept away. And when I knew and I saw this, I went and heard this, I went forth from the home life into homelessness. So this word here, this word which is translated as unstable, it literally means in Pali, it is the Pali word aduva, and it is a synonym for anicca, for impermanence. So it means something like life in the world is kind of unreliable, unstable, impermanent, changeable, right? It is swept away, and I like this idea of it being swept away. There is nothing really to hold on to. There's nothing there that is lasting, nothing that you can attach to, nothing that you can use to rely on in this world. It is thoroughly, inherently unreliable. And it's like this idea of the carpet under your feet. You know, you try to stand somewhere, and as soon as you take a stand anywhere, in other words, you're holding on to something, you're using something as a support, something to hold you up. As soon as you do that, nature, not somebody, but nature comes and pulls the carpet under your feet. And as it does that, you start stumbling and you don't know where to stand anymore. And whenever you try to stand somewhere, every time somebody, nature itself, comes to pulls out that carpet from under your feet. And you stumble and you fall over and you hurt yourself as a consequence. Everything is unstable. Anicca is so thoroughgoing, right? It's so complete. Absolutely everything is imbued with this instability, always moving on, always changing. And it is very easy to be caught up in a sense of safety in life, right? We live in a fairly stable society. We have a house which is fairly kind of secure. You get kind of lulled into this sense of comfort sometimes. But sometimes you are reminded of how uncertain things actually are. They are far more uncertain than we really are able to see sometimes. And I remember reading an article recently, about society and how kind of unstable society really is. And there was some research that had researched kind of how vulnerable society is to shocks, right? To if something happens in a certain area of society, what happens to everything else? How stable are those institutions and things that we have built up? And the reality is, it seems, they are much more unstable, much more in danger of falling over and kind of come crashing down than it appears, right? So, and also everything is so connected with each other. One part of society falls and everything else collapses as a consequence. So what they were saying is that it is basically an illusion. The sense of stability and reliability we have is just really an illusion. So it is very deep-seated in us as human beings. We need things to hold on to. That is just the natural consequence of having a sense of self. When you have a sense of self, you need to attach. You have to attach. That is the nature of the self to do that. Because the self wants to control. The self wants to own things. So attachment happens. And that attachment happens as a consequence of that particular experience of things being reliable, being permanent, being something you can hold on to. That is also part of that delusion of the sense of self, right? Things are really reliable. You really can control things, etc., etc. So this is this thoroughgoing impermanence underneath it all. And this is what he is pointing towards here. And when he started to understand that, whoa, there's nothing to hold on to in the world. I've got to find some solution to this problem. So he decides to go forth as a consequence. So this idea of anicca, we say impermanence, and we think we know what it means, but actually it's a very profound concept, a profound idea. And sometimes the word impermanence isn't really enough to understand what's going on. It's unreliable, impermanent, right? Unreliable to me is also a kind of more strongly emotional term than the word impermanent. So different translations adds to the understanding of what is going on. Okay, so the world is unstable. It is swept away. There is nowhere really to hold on to. And so we need to look somewhere else, and we need to start practicing the spiritual life and find at least some degree of refuge within ourselves, right? Within our own practice, within our mind, within our own heart, where we have some kind of refuge from the unstable world. It is wonderful, Master Ratapala. It is marvelous how well that has been expressed by the Blessed One who knows and sees, accomplished and fully awakened. Life in any world is unstable. It is swept away. It is indeed so. Master Ratapala, there exist in this court elephant troops and cavalry and chariot troops and infantry, which will serve to subdue any threats to us. Master Ratapala has said, life in any world has no shelter and no protector. How should the meaning of that statement be understood? What do you think, Great King? Do you have any chronic ailment? I have a chronic wind ailment, Master Ratapala. Sometimes my friends and companions, kinsmen and relatives, stand around me thinking, now King Kauravya is about to die. Now King Kauravya is about to die. What do you think, Great King? Can you command your friends and companions, your kinsmen and relatives, come, my good friends and companions, my kinsmen and relatives, all of you present here, share this painful feeling so that I may feel less pain? Or do you have to feel that pain yourself alone? I cannot command my friends and companions, my kinsmen and relatives thus, Master Ratapala. I have to feel that pain alone. Great King, it was on account of this that the Blessed One who knows and sees, accomplished and fully enlightened, said, life in any world has no shelter and no protector. And when I knew and saw this and heard this, I went forth from home life into homelessness. And the word for a protector here is abhisara, which possibly can mean like a lord, like a god, for example, or something like that. That is one possible meaning of that word. It's a little bit unclear exactly what it means. It could just mean like a companion or somebody who protects you in a kind of lesser way. But all of those meanings may very well be applied there. There is no protector in the world, right? And of course, that is one of those things that makes the Buddhist teaching kind of different. In most other teachings or most other religions, you have either a creator god, or if you haven't got the creator god, you have some personal god that you kind of helps you out when you have difficulties, etc. These are kind of very common things in most religions around the world. But according to Buddhism, there is no one like that. There is nobody to protect you. In the end, you have to be responsible, right? There's nowhere to really shelter. You can't hide under a rock or something and say, may my bad karma not come to fruition. It's not going to work. You have to take responsibility. And there is something about that which is kind of scary sometimes for people. Responsibility is 100% with me. Right? Gee, I don't know if I can deal with all that responsibility. I need help. I need somebody to kind of show me the way. I can feel how conditioned I am by my surroundings. How can I take full responsibility for my own life? right? It's kind of, oh, there's nobody there to really help me. Of course, there is help at hand. There is the Buddha's teachings and there is such things. But in the end, you have to take responsibility for how you live your life, for what you do. And once you kind of get over that initial shock and maybe kind of fear of responsibility or whatever, you realize that actually having responsibility for yourself, actually, it is very empowering. Because it means that you can do something with your life. It means that you can change your circumstances. It means that you can actually change your inner life to something better. You have that power. It is not in the hand of some capricious God or some kind of unknown quantity outside of you. It is you in your own hands. If you do the right thing, it will actually happen. There's something, to me, there's something very kind of unpleasant about the idea that some kind of God should have the final say. We don't know anything about this God, right? Who is this God? What kind of what will this God do to us? Do we have any security in that? It's kind of, when you understand that, it actually is a bit uncomfortable to place your life in somebody else's hands. And we often see that happening certainly in the human realm. You place your life in the hand of some kind of guru, right? And they end up kind of doing all kind of bad things to you as a consequence. This is one of the great things about the Buddha's teachings. Instead of placing our life in the hands of some kind of guru, we actually go back to the word of the Buddha and we take that as the as our guide. It means there's much less chance, hopefully. It still happens, of course, that's just life, but less chance of abuse and all these kind of problems. So taking responsibility for oneself is kind of one of those great messages of the Dhamma. You are responsible. Each one of us is responsible. Scary, but actually very empowering when you think about it. That is the message of this one. There is no shelter and there is no protector. You have to look after yourself. And this is also part of that thing that was mentioned the other day when somebody here asked about the five contemplations, right? One of those is that you are the heir of your karma, heir of your actions, etc. And that is precisely that same thing, the idea of responsibility here. You have to take responsibility, and then it kind of comes together based on that. Okay. It is wonderful, Master Ratapala. It is marvelous how well that has been expressed by the Blessed One who knows and sees, accomplished and fully awakened. Life in any world has no shelter and no protector. It is indeed so. Master Ratapala, there exists in this court abundant gold coins and bullion stored away in vaults and lofts. Now, Master Ratapala said, life in any world has nothing of its own. One has to leave all and pass on. How should the meaning of that statement be understood? What do you think, Great King? You now enjoy yourself provided and endowed with the five kinds of sensual pleasure. You will... But will you be able to have it of the life to come? Let me likewise enjoy myself and be provided with these same five objects of sensual pleasures. So here you can see it refers to the actual objects, all the ownership. Or will others take over this property while you will have to pass on according to your actions? I cannot have it thus of the life to come, Master Ratapala. On the contrary, others will take over this property, while I shall have to pass on according to my actions. Great King, it was an account of this that the Blessed One who knows and sees, accomplished and fully awakened, said, life in any world has nothing of its own. One has to leave all and pass on. And when I knew and saw that, and I heard this, I went forth from the home life into homelessness. Life has nothing, any world has nothing of its own. Any life, any person has nothing of its own, right? World here is a word for people, persons. Persons have nothing of their own. And what it's saying is that the sense of ownership that we have is to a large extent an illusion. It's a delusion. We don't own things quite in the way we think we own things. Because nature always comes around and takes things away from us sooner or later. And that's why people grieve when they lose things. That's why they grieve when the house burns down and all these kind of things. They thought they were the owner. They thought it was their right to have these things. But actually, nature has different plans for you. So the idea of ownership, it is an illusion. It's an illusion of control, that we can control things, when actually our ability to control is incredibly limited. And this is also the idea, one has to leave all and pass on, right? The same thing we were talking about before, the idea of borrowed goods. We borrow things for a while, and then whenever the owners, whenever nature says, okay, you had them long enough, not when you want to, right? That's part of the problem. Not when you are ready to give them up, but when nature says, now you've had it long enough, I'm going to take it back regardless of how you feel about it. That is this idea of having to leave all borrowed goods, right? Everything is borrowed. I like that idea of everything being borrowed. It's a very kind of powerful way of looking at life, right? Everything is borrowed. Everything, you have it for a while. You don't know when you're going to have to give it up again. And it kind of makes you a little bit more weary or wary of what can happen. Makes you a little bit less attached. It makes you stand back a little bit more and look at your things in a slightly different way. And then you that is also can be helpful in your practice. So you leave everything behind and then you pass on. And of course you pass on. And then the kamma is what matters. It's the mental development that matters. It is wonderful, Master Ratapala. It is marvelous how well that has been expressed by the Blessed One who knows and sees, accomplished and fully awakened. Life in any world has nothing of its own. One has to leave all and pass on. It is indeed so. Now, Master Ratapala said, life in any world is incomplete. Insatiate, the slave of craving. How should the meaning of that statement be understood? What do you think, Great King? Do you reign over the rich Kuru country? Yes, Master Ratapala, I do. What do you think, Great King? Suppose a trustworthy and reliable man came to you from the east and said, please know, Great King, that I have come from the east, and there I saw a large country, powerful and rich, very populous and crowded with people. There are plenty of elephant troops there, plenty of cavalry, chariot troops and infantry. There are plenty of ivory there, plenty of gold coins and bullions, both unworked and worked, and plenty of women for wives. With your present forces, you can conquer it. Conquer it then, Great King. What would you do? We would conquer it and reign over it, Master Ratapala. What do you think, Great King? Suppose a trustworthy and reliable man came to you from the west, from the north, from the south, from across the sea, and said, please know, Great King, that I have come from across the sea, and there I saw a large country, powerful and rich, having all of these things, every one of these countries. Conquer it, Great King. What would you do? We would conquer it too, and reign over it, Master Ratapala. Great King, it was on account of this that the Blessed One who knows and sees, accomplished and fully enlightened, said, life in any world is incomplete, insatiate, the slave of craving. And when I knew and saw and heard this, I went forth from the home life into homelessness. This idea of being a slave to craving, right? Craving says, go out there, get more, increase your holdings. You only have one country. You can have more countries, right? Add a few more countries to your possessions and see how many countries you can own. And then you can have more gold. You know, it's not enough just to have one ton of gold. It's not safe enough. What if somebody comes and steals that gold? You need more gold hidden away somewhere else to make sure that you are safe for the future. But of course, there is no safety, right? There is no final point when you have enough. You never have enough. And you keep on going, a slave to craving. Craving is in the driver's seat, and wisdom is kind of lost in the back seat somewhere here. And this is the problem here. And it doesn't matter how much you have, craving is always going to be there, because you haven't solved the problem at its root. And the problem at its root is that there's something missing inside of you. there's something there, you're lacking some sort of happiness, some sort of contentment. And as long as that is missing, you will seek to fill that hole inside of you, that gap inside of you, by external objects, going out, seeking for more things, right? More wives. How many wives can you have? And more gold, more bullion, more ivory, more everything. And trying to fill up that hole inside of you. And it never fills up. It doesn't matter how much you have. And the reason is because you're looking to fill up that hole in the wrong place. That hole inside of you is a psychological lack. It's a lack in your mind. You can never fill up that psychological lack through external things. You have to do it through doing something with your mind itself. Making your mind happy, making your mind content, living a good life, being kind, being virtuous, being generous, being compassionate to other people and all of that. That is what fills up the hole inside. Gradually, you become more content with life. Gradually, you start to feel the real joy and happiness that comes from kindness, from living well. And that joy is in the present moment, not in the future. It has got nothing to do with craving. It has to do with the here and now. And then, for the first time, not for the first time, but maybe for the, you know, in this long samsara, you had some of these feelings before. But now you start to feel, wow, this is it, right? Contentment. Satisfaction, a sense of completion, a sense of no more hole that needs to be filled in all the time. And that is what this path promises you. It promises you more than you can ever have as a king. The king is still a slave to craving, but you can become free from that craving, free from the shackles of craving, and actually feel that contentment fully and deeply. And the further along the path you go, the more deeply you feel that contentment, that satisfaction inside, a sense of completion, a sense of finality, no more running around restlessly and agitated and never actually getting anywhere. And this is what happens in samadhi practice, right? Where you start to feel that you're actually touching the meaning of life itself for the first time. You think, wow, this is it. And that's why they say, once you have a real samadhi experience, I mean a really deep one, and very few people have the really, really deep ones. Many people are kind of moving in that direction, which is wonderful. But the really deep ones, they are like what they call a positive trauma. You know, you have a trauma and you can't forget it because, oh, it's such a terrible experience. You went to war, you saw people being killed or whatever, and it affects you for life. And this is a positive trauma. It's the opposite. The experience was so good, so powerful, that it never leaves you for this life and perhaps lives beyond as well. Right? Final satisfaction, final completion, real happiness, real contentment, etc. That is where all this is going. And that is probably what Ratapala had some glimpse of, and that's why he decided to go forth. So, it is wonderful, Master Ratapala, it is marvelous how well that has been expressed by the Blessed One who knows and sees, accomplished and fully awakened. Life in any world is incomplete. Insatiate the slave of craving. It is indeed so. So there you are. That is the marvelous Ratapala Sutta. And it's just really a summary of many Dhamma points coming together. But I always enjoy reading out that sutta, so I put it in there. So that is all for this morning. So please continue enjoying yourself, and I'll see you again at 3:00 this afternoon.